Techno Progressivo. You are listening to Techno Progressivo on 101.9 CITR in Vancouver.
Welcome to Techno Progressivo. I'm DJ Waugh, and you're listening to 101.9 CITR in Vancouver. I've got an excellent interview feature on tap this evening from Synosure label boss Mike Shannon. I will get to that shortly, but first let's check out this episode's track of the week. I love the driving bass and hip-hop vocal here. It's Jamie Jones and Schoolboy Q with one called Wild Youngster. Enjoy this. Okay, an excellent track of the week there. Again, that was Jamie Jones and Schoolboy Q with Wild Youngster, and it's out now on 360 Recordings. On to the feature for tonight, I was fortunate to interview a true legend of the Canadian techno scene, Mike Shannon. He's had a huge impact on underground music in Canada and is currently celebrating 20 years of his Synosure label. With a compilation being released a few months back, full track list and a big collection of Mike Shannon web links can be seen on Techno Progressivo's Facebook page. On to the interview.
Okay, so this is DJ Waugh speaking to Canadian-born and currently Berlin-based DJ and producer Mike Shannon, a veteran of the international club scene. He's been producing and DJing since the 90s and continues to do so until this day. He's played a list of enviable gigs, Fabric in London, Spy Bar in Chicago, Flash in Washington, D.C., and Mutech Festival in Montreal. To add to this, he's been released on a number of iconic labels, his own Synosure and Haunt labels, plus 8 records, Defected and Fabric, amongst others. Synosure is currently celebrating its 20th anniversary, and that's why we find ourselves here today to learn more about that and the man at the helm. So it's my pleasure to be speaking to Mike Shannon. To begin with, how would you define your sound?
My sound, really the sound signature that I'm pretty known for, would be swinging kind of groove, house music, deep house, techno, deep techno. It's really difficult to narrow it all down. I do a lot of different things, man. But I mean, it definitely has, the signature is definitely all about the sort of groove that's there. I think that a lot of people sort of recognize that in a lot of my productions, and a lot of sort of emphasis on sound design and stuff.
Thank you. Is there anything about life and growing up in Kitchener and Ontario that inspired you to produce this type of music?
Yeah, for sure. I think the proximity to Detroit really had a lot of impact on me there, and just the group of friends and the scene that we had kind of grown up in there, and the scene that we sort of nurtured at the time there. So, you know, I think a lot of that had to do with those influences, and a lot of the different guests that were coming to play at our parties and stuff like that had a lot to do with those influences too. So yeah, I think definitely the proximity of between close to Toronto and close to Detroit there really had a lot of impact.
Was it easy to find clubs at that time that were willing to showcase techno, or was it more of a house?
We were creating them, basically. So we were the ones sort of booking out different venues, and we sort of created our own thing happening that way. And we were working together with a lot of other promoters in the area and sharing on bookings. So we were able to bring probably some serious international guests through on the circuit. And we would do sort of weekday gigs, and it would be like a Thursday night gig or whatever. And we would sort of piggyback with other promoters in Toronto. I mean, as far as the other than that happening, that was it. You know, it was our nights that were house and techno. There wasn't anything else.
And then how did you first get into producing?
Well, I guess it would have just been really just keen into synthesis and into the whatever, making my own sounds and stuff, and just started off getting one keyboard. I think it was a Juno 106 Roland synthesizer, and I was probably about 14 or 13 when I got that. And then it just sort of, whatever, from there just sort of kept collecting, and then had friends that were into the same thing, and sort of made a kind of makeshift studio between a few of us. I mean, there was no, you know, the computer technology at the time, it wasn't really, you could just we run a PC, and it wasn't possible. You had to have a few things together, pieces of hardware to sort of make it happen.
When you are producing now, which DAW do you produce with?
I've been working with Ableton Live for many years now. I used to do a lot of different work with Pro Tools and stuff too, but I really feel that Live has really come a long way on so many levels, and I really don't need to deal with anything else these days.
And within Live, do you use mostly their VSTs, or do you use a lot of external?
I use a lot of third-party VSTs too. I use some of the other plugins too, but I use a lot of third-party things. I'm really into Sound Toys, for example. Big fan of those plugins, and I'm a big fan of the instruments from Applied Acoustic Systems from Montreal. I think those guys are probably the most underrated plugin developers out there. Okay. Their stuff is amazing.
So you mentioned that when you first started, you were using strictly outboard gear due to the limitations of the day. Now, are you doing both outboard and VST stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I definitely go for the best of both.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of amazing things out there that are software there's equally some amazing new things that are hardware too. So I like to have it all.
When you start programming or making a track, do you have a tune in your head before you start doing this, or do you just muck around and let it flow?
Yeah, it depends, man. I think I like to, the better things that I've done, I think, are things that I have a really precise idea of where I want to go. And sometimes it's just sort of like singing in the shower sort of situation where you've got some sort of hook in your head and you go from there. And those things really tend to work really well. But those happy accidents happen too, where you're just mucking around and you stumble into something that works really well. You know, it just depends, but I find that the better things that have come together are things that were a bit more concrete and precise ideas.
When you first started producing, which aspect of production did you find most challenging?
I guess for me, just not being a musician so much, I'm more of a engineer and a sound designer than anything else. I guess the biggest challenge for me is always being able to communicate those ideas really well with other musicians. You know what I mean? So it's always been an Achilles heel for me, just my lack of knowledge on so many levels. You know what I mean? I mean, I really get by really well there, but I would say that be the biggest challenge sometimes is really just articulating your idea to somebody else musically.
Can you tell me about a time when you realized this could be more than just an interest and was actually morphing into a legitimate hobby and a career?
Yeah, I mean, I was probably 18 or 19 when I started getting a lot more bookings were going on. It was sort of the peak of a lot of things that were happening in Toronto, and I was like getting flown out to Vancouver, stuff like that. And I remember being like, all of a sudden things were really kind of taking over there, and it was really affecting a school and other things that were happening in my life. And I really just sort of had to had that decision already that that's what I really wanted to do. You know, of course, my family was really against that in a major way. But then at some point, I ended up kind of like supporting my family a lot with what I was making from doing the circuit and everything. So I figured that out quite early on. I think probably by the time I was 16 or 17, I was really convinced that that's where I was going and that that was my destiny, was to do something like this. You know, I didn't know how, if that was going to work or whatever, but I was pretty confident that that's where I was going, and I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Something pretty new. There's something pretty new.
Currently, you're based in Berlin. What initially drew you to that city?
Well, you know, there's so much happening here, especially at the time when I moved here, which is probably about 13 or 14 years ago. There was such a vibrant scene going on here, and we had so many friends that were here and more that were coming, and it was just sort of like this magnetism that was drawing everybody here, and it just seemed like an exceptional hub, you know, in a home base to be moving around in Europe from here for so many reasons. But it was actually my wife that was once really keen on being here. I was a little bit nervous about moving here, to be honest, because I was thinking maybe I wasn't going to get anything done.
Okay.
Just going to be losing my mind over here or something, you know. But then the complete opposite thing happened. We got pretty grounded when we got here and, you know, started a family when we got here. So things like that. So, you know, it was pretty funny how the whole thing turned out. It ended up being kind of a grounding experience more than anything else for us.
When it's not COVID time, what is the club scene like there?
It's a difficult question. There's so much going on here that way. And it's how to describe that to you. Well, you know, at this time of the year, when things start to, springtime rolls in and people start to get out, open airs, and the gardens of some of the clubs are opening, it's quite an amazing atmosphere on so many different levels. And it's just kind of a no holds barred sort of freedom that you have here, where no one's judging and no one's telling you the word stop. No one's telling you the word no. That's kind of like a nice change. If you're coming from Canada, I think it's a pretty rare thing to have. You know, there's so many rules in North America when it comes down to nightclubbing compared to the Berlin region. You know, like you don't have to stop drinking, for example. You know, okay. The bar is not, there's no last call, that kind of thing. So you kind of like those sort of situations that are very alien to the average Canadian. Most people are sort of binge drink before last call there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then they're just sort of in that state, and people are just way more relaxed about it here. It's not such a race to the finish line. Do you know what I mean? Because there's no, you know, there's no pressure. So that's the difference.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
You've just heard part one of the Mike Shannon interview. I'm DJ Waugh, and you're listening to 101.9 CITR here in Vancouver, BC, and Canada. Full track list and an extensive set of Mike Shannon web links can be found on Techno Progressivo's Facebook page. Here's part two of the interview.
So with COVID altering the live performance aspect of the past year, have you had to come up with alternative ways to share your music and mixes with clubbers? And how has that been as a performer?
In terms of doing anything, I mean, just the whole streaming thing, doing a couple of different streaming performances and things like that. But it hasn't really been that much different really than the way it was before, but just way more emphasis on cameras than before, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that that's been a big thing. But in terms of me reinventing anything, I didn't do anything differently so much from what I was doing already before. You know, I think like a lot of people really got, put a lot of emphasis on their Bandcamp pages and releasing older albums. So I kind of did a couple of things like that, kind of got the rights back to a couple of old records, like the old +8 one, for example, and put that on my Bandcamp, or one of the old 4-sync records, put that on my Bandcamp and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people were sort of adjusting and putting a lot of emphasis on that to just to kind of monetize as much as they could from what they've done.
Okay.
But in terms of different, it's really been sort of, it's kind of like in the same formula, to be honest.
Okay.
Haven't done anything too different. Yeah.
Okay, when you are performing live, what's the live performance setup that you use and why?
Well, that's usually when I'm playing live, I'm playing together with, well, the last few years now, I've been playing together with a guy, or it's called DeWalta, and the two of us combine and basically do, it's probably about an 80 to 90% sort of improvised setup. So we just kind of like have the gear running. We have a few sort of spines in there. And then for the most part, we just sort of freestyle and go with the flow and just see what happens. And a lot of times it's been getting really, you know, more and more, it's getting so more and more comfortable with doing that. And this, in terms of the actual setup, technically, we perform live with a few array of different drum machines, with like a modular synthesizer setup between each of us, processing instruments, like a processed saxophone, DeWalta playing that, and that's kind of processing through a few different things there in the modular system. And we use Ableton occasionally, but it was more like in the first years of doing shows that we were using Ableton. These days, we have everything sort of just hardware. And so it's kind of, I kind of like the way that setup is. And it's just like, there's a little bit, it's a little bit of a different way of working, but I think the rewards are greater. There's a way more of a risk the way that you were doing it lately. We haven't had a live gig, you know, since this whole thing's gone down either. I mean, we've been, we put together one live show, like recording that we did for Trommel that came out. And that was something like kind of a studio jam that we did in the studio. But other than that, it's been like over a year now that we haven't traveled and played anywhere. I'm dying to get back into doing that again. And I think that sort of improvised setup is something that I really like. I can't go back now. I think I have to kind of keep it that way.
And do the two of you sync up really, really well when you do that? Or are there ever times when he's going in a direction that you're not sure about and vice versa kind of?
Yep. Yeah, that happens. Sometimes it would happen. And the thing is, I think once you've been working with somebody for many years, you sort of can see the signs and sort of know how to sort of flow with each other and know how to take a left turn when you need to. But yeah, there's always shows that are like, things get complicated. Something goes wrong with the setup, like some things fall out of sync or something goes wrong with something technically. Like we did a show at Episode Festival in Vietnam last year. We were out there, basically the power's running on these like generators and the power's fluxing all over the place. And some of the gear was reacting really badly. So there was like my sequencer basically just wasn't really working properly anymore. None of the sequences were really playing properly. So I just had to sort of play the notes. I'm the bass player basically in the band, so it was pretty important to have that running, and I kind of kept it up for probably 15 to 20 minutes, and then I just couldn't do it anymore. And things like that, you know, you have to kind of adapt to your situations, you know, and make the best of them.
Okay, so you operate two labels, Synosure and Haunt. So how would you describe the musical policy for each of these labels?
Well, Synosure is definitely like dance floor 12-inch oriented label that we do sort of, it's been more of a minimal house and minimal techno label. That's kind of like, it's kind of a lot of things that are within that spectrum. It's not such a strict sound, but I think there's a lot of things that really complement each other well in the catalog and stuff. And there's a good array of artists there. And Haunt is more of a deeper sort of listening experience and more about the long players and more about album releases, stuff like that, as opposed to singles and 12 inches. It's more of a long player sort of, you know, I don't want to say like armchair label, but it's kind of like, it's sort of like that's been the emphasis of it, is sort of like sort of trying to bring back the long player experience, you know?
Okay.
So yeah, you know, but there's some dance floor records in the catalog there too, you know, so it's not such a strict policy there, but those are the differences.
So Synosure is currently celebrating its 20th year anniversary. And what approach did you take when putting together a compilation to represent 20 years? I mean, how do you take all of that information and put it onto a compilation?
Oh, wow, good question, man. I mean, I think the only way that I did that was just to sort of get in touch with all the artists that we've worked with over the years and just try to put them all together. And I think that's it, you know, just try to cover. There's a lot of spectrum of sound in there, you know, but I think you know, it's nice to see the you know, the evolution of what everyone's been up to. You know, if you listen to those first records from some of those artists and you listen to the tracks that are on that compilation, see where things are at. And I think that everyone's just become so much more refined and but still retaining their individual signatures, you know?
Having a label that's run that long, what are you most proud of?
I think that I'm the most proud of with regards to the label is just how we haven't really jumped on any bandwagons and jumped on and any trends too deeply. And I think that we've actually, you know, when you look back at stuff, there was a lot of things that were pretty insignificant at the timing. But then, like, you know, 20 years later, that sound somehow has become a lot more significant. And a lot of those older releases in the catalog are quite well respected and sought after. And I'm pretty proud about that. And I think that's the thing. It's just sort of the label just has had a nice amount of integrity that sort of kept it alive this long. And I'm proud of that.
Okay, and then on the flip side of that, what are some challenges that having a label, a 20-year-old label, has had for you or presented to you?
Oh, wow. Just the change of the reality of the record industry, you know? Like when we started the label, we were selling thousands of copies. You could fart on a record and sell 5,000 copies. And it's like the way that things are now, you know, it's really like, you know, our numbers are nowhere near the way they were where we started. You know what I mean? It's quite a difficult climate right now to navigate. And I think you really just have to be very careful of what you're putting out there. And I think there's just this thing is so saturated now than ever before. Like in the beginning, when we were doing stuff, there was already people sort of whining about how many releases there were a week, you know? And in the early 90s, there was like such a limited amount of techno records coming out. Everybody was sort of playing the same music almost, you know? But now, you know, you have like 1,500 records a week coming out, you know what I mean? So it's quite a difficult, climate to be noticed in the middle of that whole sea, you know, and still, you know, not because I find there's a lot of buyers are really looking always for the new thing. And if you've been around for 20 years, you're not the new thing that way. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think the real challenge there is just sort of like keep people sort of interested in listening to your records and keep them wanting to support it. You know what I mean? I think that's really the trick. It's not easy. You know, that's not an easy task.
Over the years, you produced 4 albums, including your most recent one, Cygnus Sutra, which came out last month on Black Arts. How does your approach to making an album differ from producing tracks?
Well, again, I think the approach to doing an album for me, especially one that's like conceptual sort of thing like that one, it's really like all about the how those things work together and that whole sort of essence of the long player. And you're thinking about that journey of listening to something over an hour or whatever, 45 minutes, as opposed to one track, you know. That's kind of how I like to look at those kind of things, especially with those kind of concept albums.
over your career, are there any countries or specific clubs or events that you've absolutely loved to play at?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I can name a whole bunch, but I mean, yeah, I think for me, festivals in Europe, there's like whatever Sunwaves Festival in Romania was pretty amazing, you know. And in terms of clubs and stuff here, you know, you've got like Fabric in London, it's an unbelievable club to play. There's like the Berghain and Panorama Bar experiences that I had were legendary. You know, there's quite a lot of amazing things to mention over here for in terms of clubs and stuff. It's endless. And then in North America, for me, it was all about Montreal and New Tech Festival. You know, in terms of festivals, that's really such an amazing festival to go to. It's just, you sort of discover something every time. You know, it's always amazing. And the quality of the productions are insane. Our circuitry got all mixed up. Resistors burn. Situation fucked. Rapid impedance on my heart.
Which do you feel more passionate about, performing live or producing music, and why? And which do you find more challenging?
I think that what I really like to do is combine the two of them, like actually like performing and producing a record at the same time, hitting record, and then actually using that kind of material from the improvised sessions. I'm really into this kind of thing at the moment, and really like, I love the spontaneity of that sort of thing. And I love the energy that comes out of that. And it's the reason why I think the people, when you're performing in that sort of situation, and they see how excited you are about those things coming together so nicely, it's pretty electric, you know, it's cool.
And also, do you want to promote anything right now?
We can promote my latest album, I guess. Yeah, so whatever, the Cygnus Sutra one that you mentioned, I think that's definitely something that's worth promoting right now.
Okay, this has been Mike Shannon. A selection of Mike Shannon tracks can be found on Beatport, iTunes, Bandcamp, and Juno Download, and a full list of Mike Shannon web links can be found at Techno Progressivo's Facebook page. So thank you very much for doing this.
I call it transcendence. I call it transcendence.
Psytrance, hard trance, epic trance, acid trance, deep trance, hard dance, breakbeat. Every Sunday at 10 p.m. to midnight. Hosted by DJ Smiley Mike and DJ Caddyshack.
I call it transcendence.
We're all done for another episode of Techno Progressivo. Thank you so much to Mike Shannon for interviewing, and head on over to Techno Progressivo's Facebook page to check out the track list and a full collection of Mike Shannon web links. Also, give his new album, Cygnus Sutra, a listen. It is definitely worth your time. If you've enjoyed the show and want to check it out again, you can do so in two ways. Go to CITR.ca and take a look under the Techno Progressivo show page. Alternatively, you can go to Apple Podcasts and check it out there as well. So get on that. Up next is Transcendence with DJ Smiley Mike, a two-hour trip through the realms of trance. But before we go, let's do as we always do and set the controls in the time machine for this week's track from the past. And for this one, we hop back 10 years in time to 2011. I love the perk and atmospheric sounds on this one. It's Senecia Tamamovich making some magic on Tom Middleton's track, The Jungle Drums. Enjoy this, and I will see you again here in 2 weeks.